You are tuned in to the Foul Weather Podcast, the forecast to your next successful hunt. Coming to you from the home office, Jack's Reef, New York.
Waterfowl hunt management varies widely across duck country on public and private lands. In part four of the Foul Weather Podcast 2024 Wetland Management Series, we dig deep into what we know about the drivers of duck hunter satisfaction, what hunt management techniques are used to put more ducks in front of your blind, what data we collect and more often do not collect about duck hunter satisfaction and response to waterfowl hunt management techniques, and we will end with some insights about the utility of hot crops. In this series, we provided context about why actively managing restored wetlands is 100% necessary, actually critical. We let you know how you should manage your wetlands, but also why the public hunting grounds that you visit should be actively managing their wetlands for waterfowl. The goal of the Foul Weather Podcast Wetland Management Series is to inform the duck hunting community about techniques used on private and public lands to improve non-breeding habitat for ducks. Said another way, our aim is to inform you about how to feed and rest ducks during their fall migration, through winter, and into their spring migration back north to breed. Digging even deeper, the Foul Weather Podcast aims to inform duck hunters how to manage wetlands to kill more ducks, but also provide the food and rest resources needed to conserve ducks. We should never see duck hunting and duck conservation as mutually exclusive. They are intimately linked in our past, and we'd hope that they are for the foreseeable future. As duck people across duck country, we aim to hunt and conserve ducks. And we've coupled these activities in the U.S. through the North American model of wildlife conservation, where your dollars are earmarked and go back to conserve our wildlife resources. So let's start today. Let's start part four with dissecting a bit of information about hunter satisfaction, because that is the reason for hunt management in the first place. Because duck hunters desire a certain type of duck hunt that meets or exceeds our expectations. We all talk about what makes a good duck hunt, and it does vary widely among individuals and regionally. Over the years, I've done my best to glean information from the reports and publications focused on waterfowl hunter satisfaction, and a few items really stick out. 1. People don't tend to want to drive more than 1 hour to hunt. 2. About 50% of us, think that overcrowding and interference from other hunters is a problem to some extent, with about a quarter of us thinking that overcrowding and hunting pressure is a very serious problem. And 3, the literature on how many ducks we need to shoot to be satisfied varies, but it's rife with survey biases created by the users themselves, not the survey design per se. Let's start with the driving distance to hunt. Some states have acknowledged that driving distance is a barrier and work to place quality waterfowl hunting areas within an hour drive of every potential hunter in the state. Of course, because of geography and where wetlands are and where wetlands can be restored, that's not possible everywhere. But every state should be actively attempting to acquire, restore, and actively manage duck habitat at key locations while taking travel distance into account. Next, we want to jump quickly into how many ducks do you need to be satisfied, or how many ducks do you need to harvest to be satisfied, because much of this episode is going to be spent on hunting pressure and how to run a well-managed duck hunt. I noted that I think there is survey bias and that it's in the survey design itself. People will certainly argue against my position that both paper and email surveys of hunters are biased, but when we talk to marketing people, the people in charge of ensuring consumers buy their company's products, they will tell you that paper and email surveys are a thing of the past. So if we think about duck hunting as a product and duck hunters as our consumers, why are we still using paper and email surveys to ask what someone's preferences are in a duck hunt? It's a really good question, right? It's probably mostly based on logistics and costs, right? But there are many ways that marketing folks get data from potential consumers. One is just data mining, and I'm not going to get into data mining here. But the others include actually videotaping or accompanying a consumer. For instance, at the hardware store is they are looking to build a deck and then asking that individual why they purchased certain items at the point of sale. Why did you choose this over that? The other way is through invited market research, where eye tracking is used to determine what customers find most attractive. Imagine four scenes on a screen in front of you. A beautiful sunrise over the marsh. Kids in a duck blind and people talking. A beautiful sunrise over the marsh with lots of ducks in the air. And then a bunch of people after the hunt with a pile of dead ducks. Where do your eyes spend most of the time? This is telling of how you would react in the moment, not when you've had time to reflect and think about your answer in the context of the other answers. Reflection actually can create bias because you tend to act emotionally about why you hunt and when to hunt rather than rationally and reflective. There's lots of really good psychology work behind this one, folks. That's why the marketing people are no longer using paper and email surveys. All right, really quick. Would you like to shoot a limit of ducks on opening day next season? Pretty easy to know that answer, right? We're sure you're going to say yes. Okay, now how many ducks do you need to shoot to be satisfied? 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 if the limit is 6. There's a bit of psychology in this here, but the majority of hunters answer somewhere in the middle around 3, and that's called an anchor point by marketing folks that think long and hard about these questions. Not because it's truly what satisfies you, but because 0 to 2 doesn't seem like enough, and anything 5 and above starts to feel greedy. The fact that a good number of folks state that they never need to shoot a duck to be satisfied with a hunt is likely true, to some extent. But shooting ducks is always better than not shooting ducks, right? If shooting ducks was not important at all, but rather it was about beautiful sunrises, having coffee and breakfast with friends and family, and petting a wet dog, then we'd all be in duck blinds during spring migration just hanging out without guns at our sides. So ultimately, it is about shooting ducks, just some folks may be more dissatisfied than others when they don't shoot ducks. Hey, that box of shells says, "I didn't come this far to miss." It doesn't say, "Hey, let's sit in the cold and drink some coffee." In my opinion, some state and federal agencies use available hunter survey information to provide a subpar hunt on public lands and be okay with it. Well, the hunters told us they don't even need to shoot ducks, or they basically only need to shoot a duck to be satisfied. Right? And we've all answered that way, and for some folks that might be true. But put all that great stuff together. Beautiful sunrises, having coffee and breakfast with friends and family, petting a wet dog, the smell of gunpowder in the air, and then add a pile of dead ducks. It's never worse than not shooting ducks. So in my opinion, public land managers should be aiming to put the greatest number of ducks over your head with the greatest potential to shoot limits, with the realization that they will likely never get there. What that also means is they need to work harder at duck habitat and duck hunt management. However, duck hunters should do the same. Have the realization that getting a limit is highly unlikely. Temper your expectations. But goodness, be truthful with yourself that the goal is to shoot ducks. It's called duck hunting, not bird watching. You also hear that point of sale surveys or surveys at hunting areas as someone leaves are also biased because the individual doesn't have time to reflect on the hunt. But aren't the collection of emotional decisions along with reflection the real motivation for duck hunting? What we found from Mississippi Wildlife Management Areas in a study I was part of a few years ago was that the greatest increase in hunt quality scores were when a hunt went from 0 to 1 duck per hunter. So shooting ducks matters. Then for every additional duck, up to 6 ducks, we saw increases in hunt quality scores by hunters, but that increase was smaller as we moved towards 6 ducks. The greatest satisfaction was in shooting mallards and increased up to 3 mallards, but then that hunt quality score was not increased further by adding the 4th mallard. In fact, we saw a near 50% increase in hunt quality scores when shooting just 1 mallard when compared to 3 other non-mallard ducks. So the takeaway is that shooting ducks, and specifically shooting mallards, matters, at least in Mississippi. But mallards also only accounted for 14% of the total ducks bagged on those Mississippi wildlife management areas, so hunters should be realistic about their expectations as well. Right, here comes in the Foul Weather Podcast Duck Migration Forecast. It helps you pick the best days for a mallard migration. Not stale mallards that are hanging around and hard to kill, but the best days for mallard flights from the north. Fresh ducks, hot from the north. If you just found us, note that we produce the only duck migration forecast available from October to the end of January each year. So stick with us, folks. It gets hot and heavy during hunting season. Okay, back to duck harvest metrics and satisfaction. Overall, in that Mississippi study, we saw that 58% of hunters were successful at bagging at least one duck, with 18% of them harvesting one duck, 12% two ducks, 7% three ducks, 5% four ducks, 4% five ducks, and 12% six ducks. See? Interestingly, that percentage of hunters with the limit of six ducks was equal to or greater than those with two to five ducks, suggesting that, at times, limits are possible either by circumstances of a good migration day because of weather, or the quality of the hunter, or a combination of both. A few years back, the students in my Ecology and Management of Waterfowl class surveyed states to determine what type of hunting opportunities they provided, and 80% said they had at least one area that was specifically managed for waterfowl hunting. But then only 41% of states noted that they used post-hunt surveys to measure hunt quality and satisfaction. So they are knowingly providing a service, but then not collecting data to understand if their clientele is satisfied. Whew. How do we make decisions about what that waterfowl habitat management or waterfowl hunt management should look like to improve their product? Further, I am aware of several instances where states answered yes to the question about completing surveys, but their surveys can't be linked back specifically to a wildlife management area. That is, they are year-end surveys and not post-hunt surveys or point-of-sale surveys, so there is no adaptive link to understand if the management they are producing, either by ensuring quality active management to attract ducks, or their hunt management, such as a number of days, parties per acre, shell limit, equipment restrictions, and so on, make any difference in hunt quality or hunt satisfaction. To me, this is a huge problem. No company focused on providing a quality product would ever operate like this. Yeah, but our government can, right? Let me also express how when we were at two mallards per day instead of four a few years back, the Atlantic Flyway folks estimated that something like 14% of duck hunters wouldn't go hunting for two mallards. And seemingly, it was looked at as not important. Not important. You may have lost 14% of your duck hunters, and that's not important. 14% of your duck hunters by going from four to two mallards. Of course, it was also estimated that we would lose 40% or so of our duck hunters if the limit went to one mallard, and that seemed to raise eyebrows. But shouldn't public officials be aiming to actively increase the number of duck hunters because they play such a vital role in wetland conservation and conservation otherwise? Anyhow, there was never a reason to decrease that mallard limit in the first place, as noted in episode 34, Where Have All the Mallards Gone? Okay, so on to waterfowl hunt management and overcrowding and disturbance to ducks from hunting. But first, let me tell you about the Farmland Group. The Farmland Group has handled over $400 million in farm sales across the Mid-South and recently added some spectacular wildlife management expertise, particularly for waterfowl and waterfowl hunting, to their diverse portfolio. Maybe you want to get started with a new duck hunting property, or maybe you want to enhance an existing property to peak performance. Look no further than the Farmland Group. With licensed agents and affiliated relationships, the Farmland Group is ready to assist clients across the states of Arkansas, Mississippi, Missouri, Louisiana, Tennessee, Alabama, and Georgia. You've been thinking about it for years. No need to put it off anymore. Build your duck club dream with the Farmland Group. Their expertise doesn't stop at sales. They also have extensive lending relationships with the biggest farmland and recreational lenders in the country, as well as a staff appraiser that can assist in helping value your property. Find the Farmland Group today at farm, farmlg.com. That's farmlg.com. Okay, and we're back. First and foremost, food and disturbance are intertwined. But at some point, it doesn't matter how much food you have, because in simplest terms, ducks don't use places where guns are going off. Second, if we had restraint, which we don't, managed hunt systems would not be necessary to spread people out on the landscape and reduce the amount of times that guns are going off in the marsh. We definitely change duck behavior through hunting, and we create stale ducks through hunting, which basically leaves us hitting the right migration days for good hunts or some major change locally, like disturbance to a refuge area or a large weather event to shuffle birds around. But those are less common and definitely less predictable than flight days. I've seen this over and over again across different places in the country. The progression of duck disturbance that leads to dissatisfied hunters goes as follows. Sometimes in a new place where good foraging habitat has been restored or occurs through active management, ducks start to show up. Duck hunters find those ducks through scouting. Remember, deer hunters go into the woods hoping to see a deer. Duck hunters scout, find ducks, and then hunt them. Most of us don't just mindlessly wander into the marsh hoping a duck will fly by. So duck hunters find ducks. The hunting's good for some period of time. Then the word gets out. And increasingly, those ducks are hunted until they are overhunted, disturbed too much, displaced in time or space to refuges, never come back, and then duck hunters are left with empty skies and dissatisfied. So increased opportunity or lack of hunt management very often leads to dissatisfied duck hunters. But this is often overlooked as a positive by public agencies. Public agencies think that by providing more opportunity, this will lead to more duck hunters, when in fact the opposite might be true if that opportunity is not at some level of quality, that is, hunters are seeing and harvesting a reasonable number of ducks. Case in point, our local public areas are managed by the feds as a National Wildlife Refuge and the state as a WMA. The National Wildlife Refuge hunts Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday until noon at a rate of one party, or two hunters in this case, per 50 acres. The nearby state wildlife management area is completely wide open with no restrictions. On Saturday of opening day of duck season, the National Wildlife Refuge and WMA likely shoot about the same number of ducks per hunter, but the shooting on the WMA continues into Sunday and so on without a break. It takes about 2 days to push nearly every duck off the WMA and onto the unhuntable portions of the refuge, whereas the refuge continues to hold ducks and sustain around a 2 to 3 duck per hunter average throughout most of the season. This is a perfect example of more opportunity on the WMA, but after the first few days, the actual number of duck hunter use days becomes dismally low because there aren't any ducks left to shoot, so they don't go there. So can this really be called opportunity? In contrast, for about 25 reservation spots at another nearby National Wildlife Refuge, they have about 480 applicants for opening day, right? 25 reservation spots and 480 applicants for opening day, suggesting that hunters are seeking a hunting experience that is limited, that is, demand by hunters is much greater than the supply provided by the state and federal areas. So while hunters are telling us they're seeking a quality experience and there's not enough places to access that quality experience, we are not restraining ourselves enough on the remaining public land that is just open to ever obtain said quality hunting experience that we seek. I'm to blame too. I have areas that I know I can get into groups of 300 to 400 mallards circling if I let them build up. And it's an amazing experience working them into a small timber hole off the river. But I'm not the only person that knows about it. So when it gets to about 50 ducks, I go. Or more often than not, someone nowadays is there every day, and it never gets good, even once per season. So while hunters tell us they are seeking a quality experience, and there's not enough places to access that quality hunting experience, we are not restraining ourselves either on the remaining public land that is just open. Right? So what we're left with is a hunting experience that never meets our expectations. Now also remember that constantly having guns in a place also defeats a good portion of the purpose of wetland conservation and management, And that is feeding ducks so that we can send them back strong. Okay, so what's that scenario then that works to hold ducks and ensure that ducks are over your decoys for quality shooting opportunities? Yeah, of course, this varies widely across North America. We'll get into a few generalizations here, but if you're interested in more detailed hunt management consultation, please do feel free to email me at drmike@foulweather.co. Most places, when asked why they hunt it the way they do, will tell you, well, that's how we've always done it, or that's what the hunters asked for. But few have real solid evidence using collected data as to why they hunt an area in a particular way. We really do need to put more science behind waterfowl hunt management strategies. Okay, into some general considerations for a waterfowl hunt management plan. First, and this goes for public and private lands, you should have dedicated waterfowl hunting areas that reduce all disturbance outside of hunting hours. Having a waterfowl hunting area with hunting time restrictions that has deer or pheasant or other types of hunters or recreationists trampling through is not good for holding ducks around. This includes vehicles passing by. If your hunt area has a two-track that goes by it, try to grow a tree or two, or vegetation otherwise, such as Egyptian wheat, to ensure some type of a barrier. Next, ensure adequate refuge between 25 to 50% of your area if possible. If the goal is to sustain a high duck per hunter average, then no more than 50% is needed because there typically is not any gain in harvest per hunter with additional sanctuary beyond 50%. Hunt at the most one party per 50 acres, but if you want the best experience where ducks are abundant and decoy well, go to one party per 100 acres. Parties would typically be two hunters, but should never be more than four. You will likely shoot the same number of ducks at one party per 50 acres as 100 acres, but the difference is that ducks will continue to use the marsh at one per 100 acres, and the shooting will be better and take less time to meet the harvest level that satisfies most hunters. For example, at one party per 50 acres, it might take you until 10 a.m. to get your limit, and during that time, no ducks are using that area. It's basically scaring them off because of the density of hunters. But at one party per 100 acres, you could be finished in about half the time, have bigger flocks and better shooting opportunities, less cripples, and ducks are able to land in between parties and feed in that marsh, thereby meeting your conservation and hunting goals at the same time. I've actually always wondered if you could just hunt an entire refuge at really low densities and still hold ducks, even without any refuge, because the entire place has spots that ducks find that are like little mini refuges. It also reduces likelihood of an eat out of foods on refuge areas too early in the season, so you can hold ducks longer on an entire area. Really makes you wonder, but I don't think many folks have ever tested out this theory, right? Our local refuge hunts only 25% of their area with no real rationale other than that's how they've always done it. All right, more details on how to manage your hunt and hold ducks around. Use the appropriate shotgun gauge for your area. There are clubs on Lake St. Clair that only use side-by-sides and over under 20 gauges because the disturbance is just such a big deal on these small acred clubs. Just think about it. Simply, you don't need a 3.5-inch shell and a 10 gauge to kill wood ducks. Just tone it down. Go with the ammunition and the gauge that makes the most sense for the type of ducks that you are hunting. Find other ways to reduce disturbance if needed, including shell limits and boat motor restrictions. A 25 shell limit per person is adequate, but 15 is even better. If you can't kill 6 ducks with 25 shots, you should probably go home and go to the range anyway. Hunt half days. These could be gentlemen's hours too if you have a club, right? You might shoot not first thing in the morning, you might shoot a midday period, but don't shoot all day, right? Hunt half days. While this may be controversial and some might tell you that ducks don't react to half day hunts, that isn't true everywhere, and it isn't true of every duck. In studies with ducks tagged at the beginning of season and then tracked, yeah, they really may have figured out where is safe and not enter the woods or other marshes even when they are hunted half days. But flight ducks, fresh ducks, are susceptible for a few days under the half-day regime. In some places, ducks are always susceptible to start to come into hunted areas about 10 a.m. till noon, even when they've been there for a while. Right, this is going to vary everywhere, so gauge it. But don't hunt every day, all day. Going and sitting in your blind every day just creates a place that guns live as far as a duck is concerned. Restrain yourself to 2 to 3 to 4 days per week at most and pick the best days to hunt. Pick the good weather days and flight days right? Tune into the Foul Weather Podcast to get that weekly migration forecast from October to January, where we let you know when ducks are likely to show up in your area. Again, fresh ducks hot from the north. If you're a public area, I think you should have dedicated staff to managing the land and the waterfowl hunt through an equitable draw system whereby 50% of the spots are by reservation and 50% are randomly drawn on the day of the hunt. I'd also suggest an equitable draw system on your hunt club. It just keeps members honest and infighting down. And goodness, no matter if you are public or private, collect harvest and satisfaction data from hunters. Did you see enough ducks? Did you harvest enough ducks? Did other parties interfere with your hunt? Do you think you hunted in well-managed habitat? And so on. Here's the problem, though. My sense is that fewer and fewer public servant biologists are duck hunters themselves. And the farther we are getting away from public land hunting being a quality duck hunt because A, the individuals don't care like a duck hunter would, and B, they simply don't have perspective. We should be continuing to train and place high-quality hunter conservationists into key positions for the ducks and the duck hunters. Alrighty, lastly then, we're going to provide some very basic information on hot crops like corn, milo, and your domestic millets. If you have interest in how corn on the landscape does or does not affect duck migration, please go back and listen to episode 27, the corn episode. My general comment on hot crops is that they do work, but are not necessary all the time. Everyone wants to plant something, but it takes a lot of effort and money to do so, and if you're trying to do it on poor ground or you do it improperly, it is a giant waste of resources with little to no return in ducks in front of your blind or in your bag. So first and foremost, I'd look to a wildlife consultant to provide a planting guide. Second, I'd consider moist soil management first, especially if your alternative is a harvested crop. Moist soil wetlands with proper management produce more food and more diverse food per area than harvested corn or soybeans. Next, I'd look to something more adaptable like Chiwapa millet than our typical domestic crops like corn and milo. Also remember that for WRP sites or Wetland Reserve Program sites, only 5% of the area can be in any type of crop, and that typically isn't enough to attract ducks for too long. So go ahead and plant, but I'd focus on Chiwapa millet and definitely that over Japanese millet if possible, because Chiwapa is such a better crop for duck holes than Jap millet. That said, if I had 4 impoundments at 100 acres each, I'd keep one in fully flooded unharvested corn or rice with some moist soil mixed in if I could, and then I'd rotate among the other 3 units between years, with those units being mostly moist soil annuals with Chiwapa millet mixed in and visual barriers and blind areas kind of Egyptian wheat mixed in as well. Of course, this is a generalization, and Chiwapa is a 120-day crop, so it does have its limitations as you move north. But I want to note I have nothing against feeding a lot of ducks by flooding corn, but it is certainly expensive, right? You can get a lot of great duck use out of moist soil management in incorporating a few more reliable domestic crops like Chiwapa millet. There's a term called grassy corn that you're going to hear, and I'm not a fan of it because it basically incorporates weeds into a corn crop by only doing the pre-emergent spray, right? So you do the pre-emerge, you plant the corn, and then you let the weeds come up and compete a little bit. I don't like it because you could get more moist soil weedy annuals without the competition from your corn, and you could get higher corn yields without the competition from your weeds. So I'm a fan of growing moist soil annuals on the outside of your corn crop, along the edges and your turn rows, and then maybe a few strips in the middle of the corn. So there's some areas really left to grow weeds. So weeds and corn next to each other, but not competing directly with each other, that hinders the growth of both the corn and the weeds. Again, each area is different, and you should probably consult with an expert for your specific piece of ground for wetland, hot crop, and hunt management plans to get the most out of your property. I've seen so many properties with amazing potential that are nowhere near where they should be. A small investment up front is worth thousands of ducks for days and years to come. All right, so hey, turkey season is upon us. The month of May is turkey season at the home office in Jack's Reef, and then we go into the heat of summer. So the Foul Weather Podcast isn't going anywhere, but we are pulling back to an episode once every 2 weeks for much of the summer. If there's breaking news on the duck population or otherwise, we will certainly bring that to you ASAP. For now, thanks for listening to our four-part wetland management series, and if you haven't hit all the episodes yet, go back and give them a listen. Thanks for joining us, and as always, may your skies be filled, and shoot straight, my friends.